OMU Commission meeting to order. Today being Monday, March 9th. Attorney Robert Scott, are you in line with us today?
Yes, I am. Good morning.
Good morning. Any changes to the agenda?
Justin, I have one item for miscellaneous end of the meeting.
Okay. I will add that. Also, with the absence of our secretary today, Commissioner DeBleek, could I assign you to that role?
Yes, you can.
Thank you. Any other changes to the agenda? One item added to the end here. All right, moving along, we will look for a resolution for the consent agenda consisting of the minutes from the February 21st meeting, as well as bill payments in the amount of $300,000+. Mr. Heron, on the bill payments, I did see on page 7, server update. Can you run through what that, which server that was, or any details on that?
Actually, Chair Mattern, if I could turn that over to Mike, he can provide greater detail than I can regarding the update to our storage area network, which one or what we got.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mike.
Yeah, that was just a five-year rotation of replacing the server and the SAM, which was part of our capital budget this year.
Okay. Thanks, Mike. With that, again, I'd be looking for a resolution for approval of the consent agenda.
So moved.
Second. We have a resolution and a second. Any discussion or questions? All right, Ms. Mathiason, if you could take roll.
Okay, certainly. Commissioner DeBleek?
Aye.
Magnuson?
Aye.
Erickson?
Aye.
Mattern?
Aye.
Lammer?
Aye.
And Weber?
Aye.
That carries. Thank you. Next on the agenda, we have the Labor Committee meeting minutes from March 3rd. Commissioner Weber.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Labor Committee met on Tuesday, March 3rd at 7:30 a.m. Two items to discuss. The first one was concerning a labor issue that's been brought to the Labor Committee. It was information only as an update. It still is in litigation, and it will be considered legally privileged and confidential at this time. As it proceeds, we'll keep the Commission updated. Second item was the evaluation of doing the self-survey for the Commission. It was asked upon the Labor Committee to consider when we would do another self-evaluation survey. The Labor Committee is recommending to do that every 3 years or as needed by the staff, the Labor Committee, or the Commission. So the next one would be scheduled for 2021. That's all that was discussed, and we adjourned at 8 a.m. So I submit the Labor Committee minutes for approval as a motion.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any discussion? All right. All in favor of the minutes as presented, say aye.
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 Any opposed? That carries. Next, Ms. Runge, if you could give us an update on the annual designation of the official depository.
Yes. As you remember, last month we designated U.S. Bank as the official depository, which is what we do annually. At the request of the auditors, they requested that we also add Heritage Bank, and after further discussion, we felt it was best that we just add all of our banking institutions that handle any of our money to the official depository. And so we have added Heritage Bank, Bremer Bank, and RBC that handle our investments.
Okay, thank you for the update. And Beth, to clarify, we need a motion on this, not a resolution?
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
I would offer the motion to add Heritage Bank, Bremer Bank, and RBC as part of our official depositories.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Further discussion? All in favor of the motion, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? That carries. Again, those are being added, so we have four banks now as official depositories, correct? Okay. Next, item number 5, Mr. Sangren, if you could give us an update on the 2019 penetration test.
Good afternoon, Commissioners. First, I'd just like to preface this. I designed this report to kind of give it the 10,000-foot overview as not to get too detailed in case anybody would be listening, which might be unlikely, but just in case. So if you have any questions, I'll either answer them or we can talk afterwards. So we did our annual external pen test again this year. Again, we switched to White Oak Security just to get another perspective. The testing was done between October 28th and November 1st of 2019. And after the remediation was completed, we retested again on January 17th of 2020. We were fortunate not to have any critical or high vulnerabilities, as you can see on the graph there. And just to give a definition of those, critical, high, medium, and low, that's anywhere from a high financial impact and negative media exposure, basically down to little impact or no monetary effect. So some of the vulnerabilities included internet access authentication prompts, meaning it's public. You could log in from home if you had the right credentials. And then also we had some services that didn't have multi-factor authentication enabled, meaning if you were able to log in to one of those sites, it wouldn't ask you for a code or something along that line to verify who you are. So remediation included disabling some of those functions that were actually no longer needed, and implementing multi-factor authentication. We do have a service out there that cannot be disabled, but also they don't have, it's a third-party solution that doesn't offer a multi-factor authentication solution yet. So there we just make sure we use strong passwords to kind of remediate the effects of that. So that's kind of the conclusion of the external. If you have any questions, I can answer them if you have any.
Yeah. Can I just ask, I know you said about found by severity and all that. In real down basic, does that mean like when people are trying to come into the system, is that what they are looking for or found there? Or is it internal use of it?
No, this would be on the external side. So like I said, if you at home came into one of our sites, mm-hmm. and it asked for a password, username and password, you could sit there okay. all day long trying to plug in the username and password and hope to get it right.
Okay. Okay.
So this would be anybody that's off the WMU network?
Correct.
Mike, real quickly, the third-party software that you referenced, I presume that's something, a piece of software that we're hosting on our system here, this is not hosted externally.
Correct.
I mean that it's part of this test. Okay. Just wanted to clarify. Thank you. Any other questions on the external test? We'll let you continue.
All right. So this year we did our first ever internal pen test, again during the same dates of October 28th through November 1st, and retesting on January 17th. We had no criticals, but we did have 9 high, 9 medium, and 5 low vulnerabilities. Findings included outdated software such as Microsoft Windows operating system and unsupported software running on those servers like PC Anywhere. So in those cases we had a couple aging servers, which coincidentally was a good time because they were going off anyway. One over at the power plant and our load share server here in the office that is being upgraded. Weak passwords were found on the network traffic, so even though we have a policy in place that forces users to create passwords with a certain length and complexity, if you're your cat's name followed by the year with an exclamation point. Apparently that's not a good password. So we've talked to the people that whose passwords were cracked and had them get make stronger passwords. We also had passwords stored in plain text files. So on our network drive, we had a, I believe it was some steps, procedures for somebody to log into a computer or something, and the password was right in there to log in. Although I don't think it was up to date at the time, so that was one benefit. We also had some weak ciphers still enabled, outdated SSL versions, and an expired SSL certificate on one of those old servers. So ultimately, we had five devices that were no longer needed, and we removed those from the network, and many of the vulnerabilities were eliminated just by removing those five devices. So along with some updating of software and reconfiguration, most of the findings were fixed. Now, we did have a low-risk finding that was not remediated at this time because of cost, and that's something we can budget for next year. And we do have one high-risk finding, again, because of cost and our uncertainty of the use of this product. We have it just locked down the best we can to the users that use it. So overall, I was happy with White Oak this year, with personally not knowing what to expect from an internal test or exactly what we had out there. I thought they did a very thorough job.
Thank you, Mike. I'd like to chat with you after about the two remaining items if we could. Sure. Commissioners, any questions on the report?
To explain, and if, I do just, you know, if it's a high risk that it would be important enough to do something about it. That would be my only comment on it, but I'll let you handle that, okay?
Mike, this is the first year with this outfit that we've done this test, is that correct?
Yes, with White Oak Security, yes.
And the previous firm, I forget their name, had we done two or three with them?
We did two with NetSpy.
Okay, that's who it was. How did you like the experience here? Do you have any comparables between the two firms?
They're both similar in the reports they offer. I did think that White Oak seemed like it was a little more, I don't want to say dumbed down, but maybe a little easier to read and follow on the results.
Okay. Were both organizations good to work with in terms of remediation?
Yes. So they provide the links and recommendations on what to do. So then I, and also some third party, when it's over my head a little bit, help out with that.
Okay. And we're still on the list with the Department of Homeland Security for their version?
Yes, I don't want to say I've given up on them, but I don't know.
I would suspect that actually in the private industry they're probably a little bit more thorough in some things. However, I think that there might be some elements of things that DHS might cover that they do not hear. So.
Yeah.
All right. Any final questions? Thanks for the report.
You're welcome.
Next, Mr. Marty, we have a wind turbine report.
Thank you, President. February 2020 wind turbine report. As you can see, we kind of had a mirror image of our results from January. Had a little bit of availability was down on unit 4, and that was a carryover issue between the end of January, early February, with some oil foaming issues. And the guys were able to remedy that by changing out that fluid. That was also a fluid that was identified as being suspect when we did oil testing, so it worked out just fine. So for February, total kilowatt hours was 590,960, which brings us year to date 1,189,628. Otherwise, the units have been working just fine.
That's good news. I noticed the knock. Thank you.
Always.
Any questions on that report? All right. Thank you, Kevin.
Mr. Heron, if you could give us an update on the legislative rally recap. I know you've got some additional information in our packets this time around that we haven't typically seen in the past, so I'll let you address that.
All right. Thank you, Chair Matter. This time around, I included my update in the packet, so hopefully everybody had a chance to read it rather than taking a lot of time to review the topics and the presentations that we were exposed to or given out there. So on top, first we talk about the five main topics that we address legislatively with our legislature. Followed by that was the opening keynote speaker for the Resolutions Committee meeting, and then issued briefs. If you click on the issued briefs, they're active, so the documents will open up for you if you want to read the detail. And then finally, the resolutions that were adopted, followed up by some of the luncheon committee speakers and our breakfast speakers. So with that said, I would open it up for questions. If the commission has questions on certain parts of that report. And with that, I also brought back a couple handouts if anybody's interested in it. It's behind the meter energy storage is one of them, and the other one is the value of the grid. So there's some good information there. Those are additional handouts that were not part of the packet there that APPA was handing out. So with that, I'll turn it back over to the commission, Mr. Chair, for questions and or for Commissioner Lemur or DeBleek to add to the report.
I appreciate the additional information in the packet, because for us to be able to go through and review specific items that might appeal to us, it's helpful to have that. In addition to the documents that you've got there, John, Commissioner Lama just provided this to me, so if there's any, and I see Commissioner DeBleek has a packet as well, so if there's any questions or if anybody wants to review some of this information at the end, please do so. But Commissioner Lama or Commissioner DeBleek, is there any highlights that you guys wanted to pull out or anything that was missed that's not provided here?
No, I would just comment on meeting with the congressman. We met most time with aides along with it, and they're pretty, most of them were pretty well informed. The only one that was unable to was Representative Omar was not able to meet with us, but otherwise that we did meet with them. And the way that they do that, I just find interesting, so I got to share that with you. In the past, in my past life, when we'd go out to D.C. and talk to our legislators or congressmen, we'd go to their offices. What they do through NMUA is they have a room like this, and then whatever our current topics are, like from NMUA, it was on the tax financing, the WAPA, and climate change ones. And so then as either the aide and the senator or the congressman would come in, they would meet up with all the utilities, all the attendees that were there. So it's, I always feel it's kind of like holding their feet to the fire when they come into that room of people, and for what they say, it's heard by many. It's not just on a one-to-one and nod and smile and agree with what we're doing. So that, and each, not, they didn't do it individually, but then there's questions that are asked both ways, you know, where the congressman sees things are headed and if they understand, as well as, and we're also able to understand whether that aid is kind of clear. And if not, so occasionally they ask for more information, and then either from the municipal utility or from our lobbyist, then is able to provide more information, so they stay up to date on it. And with APPA, there are things that they go that are kind of looking forward, like that megahertz. You'll see that 6 megahertz issue. That's kind of just hanging out there, an awareness. So they not only do kind of what's currently facing each of us, but kind of looking forward. So the value of the national, National Association is, because they're always kind of looking ahead and keeping us up to date on what potentials of the issues are coming up there. And otherwise than that, I just want to say thank the commission for allowing me to attend. Thank you to the staff here and to our customers that allow me to go to that, because I find it very interesting, as well as, you know, are we on the right track, you know, with our utilities? Do we need any, you know, is there something more that we should be looking for? And then one thing I just want to say, you know, Mike, because I keep asking about that whole cybersecurity and all that, it was interesting because I met with, when we were having lunch with, Chris, is that his name, from Rochester? The manager down there, because in that article it was mentioned Alexandria and Washington, so or Rochester. So I asked him, so what happened? What that you would make the news? And he said, remember, the news prints things to get you worked up. He said, it's everything just like what you said, that there's all kinds of people coming to trying to get into your system, and that's what happened. And this particular journalist that had written about it, he said, she's just trying to stir the pot up a little bit to make a story. And so she's looked, you know, picked out different ones that have had per se a security breach and look into it. And he said, we didn't do anything. You know, there was no FBI contact or anything. It was just one that she happened to pick up on. So I found that very interesting as well. Okay, I'll stop now. I'm getting that eye.
With that said, to spin off of Commissioner Lamar's comment, our meetings with our legislative delegation over the years have provided or have proven to be very beneficial. It's educating them on our concerns and challenges, and they're very interested in learning of our recommendations to some of these issues. So it's time well spent out there with our legislative delegation. Thank you.
Commissioner DeBleek,
I don't know if I can add too much more to that there than what John says. The issues we bring up with the legislators, even though some of them may be the same year after year after year, but those legislators change. You got to keep re-educating them on what our issues are. And the biggest issue we have, which keeps coming up, is the WAPA issue, where there are always recommendations out that they be sold to a private entity, and, you know, that's the last thing we want to have happen. We want to keep that public, you know, it pays for itself. It was built with dollars that were generated by the electricity that those dams generate, and they cover the cost and all that, and there's no expense to the federal government with them. With those, you want to keep those issues in front of those legislators constantly so they are aware of it, because I know they're bombarded from all sides with everything. So, and I know one speaker we had, you know, Mara Lass, and she gave a very good recap or predictions on some of the elections coming up in the primaries, and I think she was spot on after looking at what happened in the Super Tuesday. I think she was spot on with her predictions for that events that day. So she gave a very, very enlightening and good talk. So
sounds like some good insights. Yeah. Thank you both for taking the time to participate in these events, especially it's just, those of us that can't.
Thanks for allowing us to go, and we'd like to see more of the commissioners attend and when they can. So,
absolutely. All right, any additional questions from the commission? Thanks for the update on that. Moving along, Mr. Herron, the Missouri Labor Monthly update.
All right, thank you, Mr. Chair. With that said, the first PDF is a memorialized document of the meeting, and with that, we'll have Mike start the video, and then if there's additional questions, we'll try and field them. So, Mike, please.
Welcome to our report from the February meeting of the Missouri River Energy Services and Western Minnesota Municipal Power Agency Boards of Directors. Board Chair Harold Skibau recommended and the board approved the appointment of David Carlsrud, Mayor of Valley City, North Dakota, to fulfill David Shalkoff's term on Missouri River's board. Shalkoff stepped down in January from the board and from his position as city manager for Valley City. Carlsrud also was named fourth vice chair of the board and as a member of the nominating committee. Under new business, the boards of Missouri River and Western Minnesota agreed to begin working toward utilizing a creative financial arrangement aimed at interest cost savings. Under the arrangement, known as a swap agreement, Western Minnesota could lock in today's low interest rates for a refunding of about $49 million in 2012 bonds when they become callable in 2022. The boards will consider final approval at a later meeting. Next, the board authorized Missouri River staff to begin negotiations with Geronimo Energy for a possible purchase of the Marshall Wind Project in Minnesota. The project consists of 9 2.1-megawatt turbines. Missouri River currently has a purchase power agreement with Geronimo that runs through 2027 for the output of the project. Also at the February meeting, the boards approved amendments to two agreements. The first of these deals with the necessary transmission line rebuild. Missouri River is required to rebuild the Ortonville to Johnson Junction line to allow the interconnection of two wind projects in North Dakota. Because there are long lead times on receiving the steel structures needed to complete the project, the boards authorized an amendment to the agreement with Great River Energy to provide early funding for the materials. The interconnection customers will reimburse Missouri River for all costs. The second amendment is to the Marion County Traffic Agreement. This agreement was made with Marion County, Iowa, at the start of construction of the Red Rock Hydroelectric Project. It provides for compensation to the county for deterioration of county roads due to heavy traffic that was expected during the project's construction period. The deterioration has proven to be less than anticipated. The amendment, which also has been approved by Marion County, will close out the agreement and mean significant savings to Western Minnesota in compensation costs. Next, the board received a status report from our benefits consulting firm, Silverstone Consulting, on potential options for adding a second health insurance plan for employees. Also, staff presented its annual report on the status of Missouri River's 401k and 457b employee retirement plans. The report showed that employee participation and contributions to the plans are well above the average of all accounts managed by Principal Financial Services. Finally, the board approved 5 federal position papers that will be presented during meetings with legislators during the American Public Power Association's legislative rally in late February. Thank you for watching. Remember to join us again next month for our report from the March board meeting.
Any questions or comments on that update? All right, Mr. Herron, we'll go on to the General Manager's Report.
All right, thank you, Chair Mattern. First one, we have Planning Committee meeting. We'll be probably sending out a notice today or tomorrow for our Planning Committee meeting. On that, a couple things, we'll be setting that up to review our RFPs for Power Plant Environmental Studies, our open house, and possibly our catastrophic event plan. Not sure if we're going to have that pulled together by that date or not, but if we do, that'll be on there as well. As we move forward, additional meetings, we got our legislative conference coming up at the end of March. Probably stay tuned. I'm not sure with coronavirus going, where that'll end up or if they're going to change that or what they're going to do with it. So stay tuned. More to come on that, possibly. And then our Red Rock Hydro Project dedication ceremony. We received notice. It's in your packet on your iPads as well. It's a 6-hour drive one way. I'm not sure if any of the commissioners are interested in going to take part in the dedication. If some of the commissioners are, please let Beth know. I may reach out to some of the neighboring members of Missouri River if they have commissioners that are interested as well. An option possibly could be to fly. Whether it's, you know, if we got some Alexandria or Marshall or some of our commissioners, we maybe can fly out of here, out of Marshall or out of Alexandria, possibly, if it's cost effective, if some commissioners want to take part in it. So if you're interested, let Beth know and I will see if we have alternatives to driving. So, and maybe you might be interested only if flying's an option. Just let us know that as well. So that would be one day. We'd fly out in the morning, take in the open house, the dedication, and come back. So, other than that, strategic initiatives are listed as always. We always try and keep them in the front of the commission. So I will open it up for questions.
Any questions on the General Manager's Report? All right, thank you, John, for that.
Thank you.
Commissioner DeBleek, you have a miscellaneous item to add.
Yeah, I just wanted to have John give us an update on keep getting questions about number of people about they are charged for a sewer meter. I think this is a city issue, but on the utility bill that goes out, there's a separate charge for a sewer meter. And it gives the indication or somebody that may not know there is no sewer meter in your house. All the charges are based off the water meter, but the bill says sewer meter. So just want to have John give us a little update on where that's at to be able to change that nomenclature on the billing.
Sure. Thank you for the question, Commissioner DeBlake. We do the billing for the city for the wastewater department. As part of our utility billing, as everybody's aware of, it's on the bill. That those charges for the wastewater, they're set by the city, they're set by city ordinance. So we do not have the ability to change the charges. We have spoke with the city, I'm going to say 3 years back already, regarding the charges and how they're titled on the bill. And they had indicated that they were open to changing and they wanted to be aligned more with ours. We changed ours 2 years ago, 3 years ago probably. They have not changed theirs yet to today. They need to change them by ordinance. The charges on the bill consists of a billing charge, meter connection charge, and that's the one Commissioner DeBlake is talking about, and an infrastructure, I don't know what the exact term is on it, but an infrastructure charge. And that infrastructure charge is the one that we've been talking about with the city, which is for water and wastewater main replacements, that we're taking over those costs here the first of the year. The meter charge that's on there, they set one of their fixed charges in their rate structure is based off of the water meter size. So if a customer or resident of Wilmer has a 5/8 water meter or 3/4 inch water meter, their charge consists of X number of dollars for that meter size. So it's tied to our water meter, even though there is not a meter in the house, but it's tied to our water meter size. So
okay,
and that's answer your question, Commissioner DeBlake.
And that's done on ordinance. Maybe when you communicate with the city, is when they're working on an ordinance, that could be something that we could have changed to more reflect to what is actually in the house.
They indicated earlier, they have indicated that they want to make some of those changes. They have to make them by ordinance. We can reach back out to them again and remind them that they have not changed their ordinance yet, and the verbiage still remains the same.
Okay.
So internally, we field a number of those questions as well. Our customer service staff, every billing period, somebody asks about the billing charge. How can you charge me X to prepare this bill? And then we got to explain to them, well, it's not a billing charge. It's a charge that reflects fixed costs that the city adds into the system. So, and a meter charge. So, yeah, from our perspective, it would be nice if they would change them.
Yep.
I think it would be less questions that our customer service staff would have to field.
I think if we could follow up with the city on that would be helpful. I know a couple council meetings ago, they had been asked the same question again by some members of the community as well, so it continues to permeate out there.
Okay. Yeah, thanks for the update, John.
Yep, you're welcome.
All right. Anything else to come before the commission today? If not, I'd entertain a motion to adjourn.
So move.
We are adjourned.